This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
The update comes from One Bills Drive. The Bills have hired a former Patriots center as an offensive assistant. Ryan Wendell joins the Bills as an offensive assistant, not necessarily a coach, but an assistant to the coaching staff. He played seven seasons with the Patriots, one game with Carolina. This is his first job on an NFL coaching staff. He'll work alongside former Patriots assistant coach Brian Daboll. The combine continues. Defensive backs on the field in Indianapolis today. 300-pounder Quinnen Williams of Alabama put up a 4.83 official time on his second try in the 40-yard dash, one of the top times in recent memory for plus 300-pounders. Montez Sweat, defensive end from Mississippi State, with an outstanding workout at 6'5", 260 pounds. He clocked a 4.41 40-yard dash on his second try. Around the NFL, barring any last-minute snags, the Jacksonville Jaguars are expected to sign free agent quarterback Nick Foles to a multi-year contract when the new league year opens next week. That would be March 13th. Jaguars are expected to release quarterback Blake Bortles and install Foles as their starter. Jacksonville will have to pay $6.5 million of Bortles' 2019 salary. And Kansas City Chiefs tight end Travis Kelce just underwent ankle surgery recently. NFL sources say that it was considered a cleanup. He is expected to be ready for the start of training camp, but he will miss some, if not all, of Kansas City's spring program. Sabres news today. Sabres defenseman Jake McCabe will miss the next 5 to 6 weeks, likely ending his season after an upper body injury suffered Saturday night in Toronto. It happened in the second period of the loss in Toronto. Second consecutive year, his season's been cut short. Sabres take on Edmonton tonight at KeyBank Center. Faceoff 7 o'clock tonight. Second of 8 home games in March for the Buffalo Sabres. And sad hockey news, Red Wings great and NHL Hall of Famer Ted Lindsay has died at the age of 93. Lindsay, a 9-time All-Star, one of the game's best left wings all time, was on the production line with Sid Abel and Gordie Howe. And that's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tansker, just back from the Combine. On the line with us to take a look at the Combine, the senior draft analyst for the Draft Network, the host of the Locked On NFL Draft podcast, John Ledger joins us. John, it's John Murphy and Steve Tansker here in Buffalo. Thank you very much for joining us.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Are you still in Indy?
I am, yes. I'm in Indy. I fly out this evening in a couple hours here.
I feel like Steve and I skipped class early because we got out of there Friday. And there's a lot that goes on over the weekend, including the on-field workouts. What did we miss? What was the highlight of the weekend, and even including Monday, so far at the Combine, John?
Yeah, it is. It's funny, though. It clears out pretty good. I think I've been in my third year coming here, and yesterday was as quiet as I'd seen it on a Sunday. I mean, there was just hardly any media at all at the defensive backs interview, open interview session. So it is funny. It clears out quickly over the weekend. But, yeah, the edge rushers, I mean, I think – a couple guys really tested well and kind of confirmed their status as top guys. I think Montez Sweat, certainly one of those guys. I thought there were concerns on tape with his bend and flexibility, but I think in the combine drills, at least, you could see that he'd been working on some things, or at least in the testing portion, he did very well. I think on tape, those concerns are still there, but you kind of hope that the athletic profile is there to be better at the next level than he was in college in that area. So he's one to take note of. Brian Burns from Florida State. People thought he was lighter, and he put on a bunch of weight, still maintained his elite athleticism. He tested at a very, very high level all the way around. It's unbelievable in the positional workouts, just so smooth and fluid, dropping into coverage. He might be better than some of the defensive backs working out today. Wow. In coverage. So he really has the movement skills the teams are going to fall in love with. He's a hard worker, and I think teams will like that as well. Character checked out with guys like he and Montez Sweat. And then on the flip side, Ja'Kai Polite from Florida did himself no favors. There's some weird interview questions during his podium session. Sounded like he bristled at teams kind of criticizing his play during one-on-one sessions with teams, interviews with teams, which is something every one of these players goes through, and he really kind of seemed like a little sensitive to it. And then proceeded to test poorly. He honestly looked sloppy in his frame, looked like he put on some bad weight quickly to get up to 258, and then he bowed out with a quote-unquote injury from the combine after he jumped 32 inches and ran a 4.83. So it was not a great day for Ja'Kai Polite at all. I think we can safely say that with everything coupled together, plus kind of things I've been hearing before we got to Indy, that he probably is out of first-round consideration.
Wow.
The question will be how far he falls into the second round or even further.
A question for you about the edge rushers, and the Bills, of course, in need of some pass rush help. How many of the group that you've seen at the Combine belong somewhere in the top 10, the Bills sitting there at number 9? Are there more than one or two that would be top 10, legitimate top 10 picks?
Yeah, I think you're looking at a possibility where quite a few of them could be in that range, to be honest. I mean, Bosa obviously one. Josh Allen is for sure going to go there. I think Brian Burns and Montez Sweat could find their way into that range as well. I mean, there's certainly a couple teams that could need one. You mentioned Buffalo, obviously. Detroit is another one that could need an edge rusher. The Giants could potentially as well. Even Tampa Bay, that decision could be something with them letting go of Vinnie Curry and not having a guy opposite Jason Pierre-Paul they can really trust. So there are just so many teams. Then you get into the top. I mean, the 49ers need one. The Jets need one. The Raiders certainly need one. That's arguably their biggest need. So it would not surprise me, as crazy as it sounds, to see four of those guys end up going in the top 10 just because it is such a valuable position. And with the quarterback class being down and not that many teams even needing a quarterback, I think that changes the landscape of the draft compared to how it typically looks.
How is it possible that these players kind of sneak in up on our consciousness? And I know that we sent John Murphy to the Senior Bowl, and that's the first time we had heard of Montez Sweat. But he seems to be rising and rising and rising. He seems like he's elected captain at the Senior Bowl. Why do some of these guys slip through the cracks until you see him at the Combine? Is there just no production in college?
Well, with Sweat, there was. I mean, two straight years he's been a double-digit sack guy in the SEC. So he's had the production. He's had the numbers. And, you know, before the season started, I kind of wrote about him. It was like, I think this guy could be a first-rounder. You know, I really think if he puts on some weight and maintains some of that athleticism and flexibility, I think he can be a first-rounder. Then he put on a bunch of weight. He got up, you know, 15, 20 pounds up to 260, which is what he checked in here. He looks unbelievable on the hoof. But I watched his tape this past season. I'm like, I'm not sure he maintain that athleticism, you know, when he added the weight. And that's, you know, again, we go back to Ja'Kai Polite. It looks like he put on the weight super fast, but he obviously couldn't maintain his athleticism during testing here. But Sweat showed that he could. And so I have to go back to the tape and look. I have a second-round grade on him right now. I know the NFL sounds like he's higher on him than I am. I think there's some talent there, for sure. But at the end of the day, I think that, you know, the tape does kind of matter most to me. I've seen guys test really well and go back to the tape and, you know, still seeing issues. Some guys really respond well to training, but it doesn't necessarily translate over to the field. You know, you think of Jordan Willis from Kansas State a couple years ago. I think there's some similarities between he and Sweat on tape. Jordan Willis did unbelievable at the Combine. Then you get to the NFL, and he's done nothing really for two seasons. Cincinnati, he's really, really struggled. So I think that's where you got to go back to with a guy like Sweat. Still a good player, a better player than Willis coming out, I think. Just more polished all the way around. But at the same time, you know, I think that there's some limitations there to consider. But for some guys, it definitely is production. Some guys didn't get the chance to, you know, you remember George Kittle a couple of years ago. He went in the fifth round, and, you know, I think that in college he had like 40-something total catches his whole entire career at Iowa, and he was this great athlete with great receiving ability, and they just didn't use him. They just didn't throw the ball to him. And so now he's getting that chance, and he's getting the opportunity to show what he can really do, and he's one of the best tight ends in the league. So I think you have to weigh all of that when you go to the Combine and go to an event like this, because you are looking for those athletic outliers. Go back to their tape, were they misused or did they just not have talent, and then kind of make a decision on their stock from there.
We're on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline with John Ledyard. He is senior draft analyst for the Draft Network. What about interior defensive line help? Quinnen Williams opened a lot of eyes with his combine, and some people believe that he could be the number one overall pick. What do you think, John?
Yeah, Quinnen Williams is a dominant football player. You can definitely make the argument because of Nick Bosa's, you know, injury history, even though there aren't super serious injuries. You can definitely make the argument that Quinnen Williams is the safest player in this year's class. It just really feels like no one is talking about Nick Bosa at all. He was good yesterday at the combine. He wasn't unreal or anything, but he's clearly the best. I mean, on tape, his tape is unbelievable. He's on the field. But because of his injury history, you know, I mean, you can make the argument for sure Quinnen Williams is the best player in the class. I mean, last year he was the best player in college football, in my opinion. So, I mean, he's just completely dominant on tape, dominant athletic profile. He came in bigger than people thought as well. And still maintain that athleticism. I mean, this guy he's incredibly physical and incredibly dominant on tape. Almost every matchup that he went up against, I mean, he was just completely unblockable. So, I mean, he's going to be an absolute star. You know, I think that people look at other positions kind of for the sex appeal of the draft. But, I mean, to be honest, like, Quinnen Williams is going to be an absolute monster for whoever drafts him. And if you look at the top of the draft, he could honestly slide. I mean, it's not out of the question he could be there for Buffalo at 9. It really isn't. I mean, you look at the top, you know, Arizona, for example, if they stay at number one, we kind of know the considerations that are facing them. They could take Quinton Williams there, but at the end of the day, it feels unlikely. Mm-hmm. A defensive tackle goes first overall. I mean, you've got the 49ers at number two. They really have way bigger need at edge rusher than they do on the interior. They already have DeForest Buckner. They just brought back Eric Armstead for another year, so the need isn't really there. I think with the Jets, you see what happens with Leonard Williams, but right now they have way bigger needs at edge rusher and offensive tackle. The Raiders drafted P.J. Hall in the second round last year, Maurice Hurst in the fifth round. Eddie Vanderdoes comes back from injury, so he could slide past them. The Bucs sound like they're bringing back Gerald McCoy. You just get down and down the list. I mean, the Giants love B.J. Hill and their guys they have, so just feels like defensive tackle could slide, and it could be a guy that's there for Buffalo in the end of the top 10. So
I'd take him.
I definitely think it's a consideration.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I think if you can – you know, there is something to be said for it being a copycat lead, and with the Rams getting to the Super Bowl with two dominant defensive tackles and some okay edge rushers, might be the recipe for the Buffalo Bills going forward if they can get a guy like Quinton Williams.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like you said, you can get pressure lots of different ways, and there's a lot of thought in the league that the interior defensive line pressure is even more effective than edge rusher. I know studies don't really show that right now, and I would say that edge production and pressure is more valuable to the defense, but still, I mean, we're talking about the ability to get to the quarterback. After having a good quarterback, that's the second most thing for an NFL team to figure out. So yeah. I think that Quinton Williams helps to do that. I don't know exactly what team is going to value him enough given the current roster setup of the teams ahead of the Bills right now, but I really think that it could be a slide for him, and he's a way better player than Leonard Williams was on tape. And you remember when Leonard Williams played at, what was it, six? And people thought he was going to go number one or be the best player in the draft, and he slid down to number six. So, I mean, I don't think a slide like that for Quinton Williams is out of the question given the assortment of teams that are above Buffalo in the top of the draft. But if it does, I mean, there shouldn't be any hesitation. I mean, he is an elite player in a class that doesn't have a ton of elite players, and I think that his tape reflects that, his testing reflects that, and I think he'll absolutely be dominant in the NFL.
John Ledyard from the Draft Network on the line with us. John, help me out with this. A great combine overall, great workout Saturday for DK Metcalf, and everybody in Buffalo in need of a wide receiver is ready to go. Sign him today. My question is, and I asked it to my partner here today, where's the production? I know he was hurt, but the production in college doesn't match the combine workout numbers. And to me, I'm not saying it, I said this to Steve here, I'm not saying it's a red flag, but I would use the next 7 weeks to look into that to see why those spectacular combine results don't match up with the kind of production you might expect to get from him.
Yeah, well, I think one of the big things to look at with DK Metcalf is his age. I mean, he's only a redshirt sophomore. So you're talking about a guy who has barely had time to really get on the field and see the field very much in college. And so I think, honestly, you know, when you look at what he did as a redshirt freshman, pushing Van Jefferson kind of out of the lineup as the season went on, who is a very good player. I mean, you remember, he was at Ole Miss with DeMarcus Lodge, A.J. Brown, Van Jefferson, all those guys are going to get drafted. Brown and Jefferson maybe have a chance to be top 100 guys. Lodge could be early day three type of guy. I mean, this is a group of receivers that was unbelievable. This wasn't just any college team around the country. Yet still, Metcalf, as raw as he is, comes in as a redshirt freshman and is pushing a well-respected guy who transferred to Florida, was their best receiver this past season. He's pushing him out of the lineup at that point in time. So, you know, I think, honestly, when you're looking at it and you're saying, you know, why didn't DK Metcalf produce? You have to remember, he's only a redshirt sophomore. Plus, this season, he actually was having better yards per catch than A.J. Brown. He had more touchdowns than A.J. Brown. He had more production on way less targets and less catches than A.J. Brown did when he came out of the lineup. I think he was averaging like something like 20 yards a catch. The guy just was dominant whenever they threw him the ball. Plus, also keep this in mind. In Ole Miss's offense, everything ran through A.J. Brown. I've heard that from Jordan Tiamu, from the coaching staff there, from Dawson Knox, who I had him on the podcast the other day. You know, the offense ran largely through A.J. Brown, targeted him a ton. And so he was getting a ton of that production almost in a force-fed capacity. Metcalf was only allowed to run like three routes in that offense. So, you know, if a quarterback knew what he was going to run before the snap, which they often did, that's a big reason why Phil Longo is no longer there, he was easier to guard in that capacity. So because of that, it made him, when they faced teams like Alabama, I know he caught the first play from scrimmage for a big touchdown, was quiet after that. Same thing with LSU. Those better defenses knew exactly what routes they were going to run, made it way harder to get open. In the NFL, he's going to get the full route tree. Teams are going to move him around. There's going to be a lot harder to guard him. And so I think you have to buy in. I mean, like, I just think with Metcalf, the athletic measurables, his work ethic, his teammates rave about him, you know, the character and everything. I mean, yes, like, he's a little bit raw and he needs a little bit of work in terms of development. But, I mean, if you can't take a chance on that guy, the NFL is it's a risky league, and he's a generally a safe risk, if you can call it that. So I just think the profile is too good to pass up.
You sound like you're sold. You're sold on him.
I do. I like him a lot. I think he's very good. I can see the path for him to struggle a little bit because of his rawness. But I really think all the traits are there for him to be a dominant player in the NFL. And now it's up to the league. They have a responsibility with some players like this with special feelings to get them the rest of the way in terms of their development.
Well, one of the things I got to ask you about, too, is that the quarterbacks threw yesterday, and I was going to ask you, was there any surprises other than the fact that Kyler Murray was a no-show? Did any of the quarterbacks help or hurt themselves significantly?
I don't think anybody helped themselves, really, to be honest. I mean, I guess Ryan Finley was okay, but I think the NFL's dug in on him on day three, so there's just kind of a limit to how much he can help himself. I mean, Haskins looked like the best guy out on the field. He still wasn't great or amazing or anything like that. You can still see some of the mechanical concerns that have teams rattle a little bit with selecting him. But I mean, I think we're pretty clear at the top for the quarterback group, to be honest. And I think Murray and Haskins are going to be the first two off the board, and Locke will come off to the team that misses out on those two that needs a quarterback. So, I mean, I think it's kind of clear how the top is going to shake out. I just think if I say one thing, it's that Daniel Jones really, I mean, he had opportunity at the Senior Bowl, and I know he won Senior Bowl MVP for the game, but he was brutal in the days of practice. There, he threw more picks in practice than any of the other quarterbacks did. Just too many mistakes in that those situations. Even in the game, I mean, he won MVP by default. There was no other option, and he had a good stat because he threw a deep ball his receiver went up and got that was off target. So, I mean, there just has been very little that Daniel Jones has done to actually help his stock in a tangible way on the field. So I think if anybody's been hurt by the pre-draft process, it's him. I think there was first-round talk. There was top 15 talk. I just think that's probably not going to end up happening, and we're going to see him more probably sometime on day two would be my guess. So that's my one takeaway from the quarterbacks. Other than that, I think the group pretty much has stood pat kind of where they were at coming into the event.
John Ledyard, our guest. Hey, John, there's local interest here in Buffalo in the UB Bulls product, Tyree Jackson. Is he still, even after the combine and after, you know, his impressive measurables, is he still a day three quarterback prospect in the draft, what do you think?
Honestly, he could end up sneaking into day two. They're just are not. I mean, every step of the way, I wouldn't say that he's wowed by any stretch of the imagination, but kind of every step of the way has just been this, everyone else struggling and showing low ceilings and, you know, not showing the upside that you really want at the position. So it just feels like with him, as rough around the edges as he is right now, there is ability there. He's come off really well on interviews. He tested really well. I mean, he ran a 4.45. I mean, that's impressive. You know, teams aren't going to sleep on that, the fact that he has that kind of speed as well. And we knew he was a good athlete functionally, but I think he's also shown the ability to be a guy that can make plays with his legs. And so there's just way more to worry about with Tyree Jackson. He can make tough throws. He isn't consistent, and he has to get sharper from the neck up. There's still obviously plenty to work on, but I think he could sneak in round three just based on the upside factor. And a team calls it a good risk, and if in 2 or 3 years it doesn't really pan out for them, it doesn't really pan out, and you move on. But I think at that position, given how valuable it is, some team is going to feel like he's worth the risk, given the intangibles, how he's presented himself, and the fact that he does have just great tools. I think some team may be willing to take that risk at the end of round three.
What's going to happen with Kyler Murray? He didn't throw at the combine. He's got his pro day coming up in mid-March. What does he have to do? What does he have to do to impress anybody going forward? Do they see him on film and they love him and they just want to make sure he was 5'10"? What else does he need to do?
Yeah, I mean, this is as bizarre a story before the draft as I can remember. I mean, just the whole, he wouldn't say during the interviews with the media that he committed to football or baseball. Then, obviously, he's going to come out and say he's committed to football. I mean, he's going to participate in the combine. Otherwise, you have no traction at all. So, looks like he's pursuing football right now. And, I mean, Gruden, for one, said he believes him and thinks that he is going to pursue football. We'll see if he can convince teams across the board. I mean, it's a fascinating situation for so many reasons. But, number one, because there just aren't that many good quarterbacks in this class. So he really could have hit the jackpot in a perfect year for him. Because last year's class, I mean, I don't know how high he's going. Like, that was considered a really, really strong quarterback class. But this year's class, there are obvious concerns between Haskins. He's just not a very aggressive passer. At least with Kyler Murray, you're talking about a 4-3 speed guy. He can make plays with his legs. He has a great arm. He makes high-degree difficulty throws. He's got to get way better from the neck up. I mean, he's not ready to be an impact player right now or anything. But the same time, there's a ceiling with him that gets you excited that you just don't see with some of the other top guys in the class. And I don't know, that might be enough in the end to honestly push him up boards and make him the top quarterback selected. So that's going to be the most fascinating part of the draft process. It is the Kyler Murray draft. I don't think there's any doubt about that. He really has an opportunity, I think, to show out and do some things. But, again, you know, not throwing at the combine and not shooting to do anything there. You know, in some ways you can say, well, good move, because the rest of the quarterbacks kind of bury themselves a little bit in that process. But then also in the same breath, you know, you've got the fact that this is a guy that needs to show teams he's ready to compete and he wants to compete. And football means a lot to him, and he's been working at it, and he didn't really show teams those things. So there will probably be mixed reviews on that part for Kyler Murray. But at the end of the day, if I'm guessing right now, I do think he'll be the first quarterback off the board. I think whatever team takes him will have some foreboding about it. You know, there's certainly a path to which it really comes back to bite you, but I think teams are going to consider his upside worth the risk.
John, one more position group to ask you about, and the Bills have a need at tight end, and it seemed like Saturday morning was a pretty good day overall for the tight end group, I thought, huh?
Yeah, absolutely, and I think one of the big takeaways is that the small school guys kind of really proved that they belong in the conversation with some of the top guys. You know, you guys like Isaac Nod are really struggling with the testing and kind of falling out of the range many expected him to be, maybe even in the second round. You know, I think we'll see him sometime day three now. You had Zach Gentry, you had Caden Smith. Some of the guys that are talked about as top tight ends kind of fall out of it. I mean, those guys ran in the 4.9. There isn't a lot of data that supports drafting a tight end that's that slow in the 4.9s, and they all had concerns on tape, to be honest. So I think that, you know, that athletic profile kind of puts those guys firmly in the day three category, where, you know, and Jay Sternberger even didn't wow. You know, he was okay across the board, but he didn't wow anybody. And I thought other guys, you know, smaller school guys like Halle Waring from San Diego State, who does have good tape when he's targeted, I thought he showed a lot of athleticism and upside. No, I thought even Foster Moreau, an LSU guy, you know, I thought he showed a ton of athleticism. And I've said for a while that LSU didn't really use him to the fullest of his ability, and I think he will get that chance in the NFL. And, you know, Utah State, Dax Raymond proved his athleticism. San Jose State, Josh Oliver, you know, those guys have good tape and good athleticism, and they're physical. They get after people. So I think some of the small school guys in the tight end group could honestly be better than some of the bigger names that we've talked about all year long. And I kind of had them late graded in the same group all lumped together, and I think the testing really broke them up. And I'm going to be moving some of those small school guys up the board while some of the bigger names might slide a little bit.
Do you think Noah Fant, the junior out of Iowa, he's 6'4", 232. I mean, he seems to be the highest rated guy around. And are any of these guys a guy that's going to walk in? I mean, I know they're not like top day one, top 10 picks. They didn't have that kind of production. But is that a reflection of college football more than it is their ability?
I mean, I think with Hawkinson and Fan, to me, you're talking about, and I only have a handful of first-round grades in this class, but those are two of them. I mean, I don't know what else you would really want in the tight end position outside of those guys, you know, because you talk about production concerns, and some of these guys have that, but not the Iowa guys. I mean, Hawkinson, great production this past season at Iowa. You know, did they throw him the ball enough? I mean, you can argue that certainly in that offense. You know, they're getting the ball every other play, but when he got chances, just made plays consistently, you know, caught everything thrown to him, terrific route runner, terrific blocker. So there's just a lot to really get excited about and like with T.J. Hawkinson. To me, he's the best tight end in the class, and I think he's very pro-ready, will translate quickly to the league. He tested great across the board. I also think Fant tested really, really well across. I mean, obviously, Fant was an elite athlete going in. Everybody knew that. He's not as polished as Hawkinson. We are still talking about a really good player who does a lot for your team and can really help you right away, I think, as an offensive receiving weapon. And he's a way better blocker than he gets advertised for as well. So to me, those are two of the top three weapons in the class, you know, along with Metcalf. I think all those guys should be early picks. You know, obviously tight end, you have to take the positional value into account in your offense. And each offense is going to be different with the way they use that position. Is it valuable enough to them to take it that high? But I think those guys can be dynamic playmakers for a team in the NFL.
John Ledyard is senior draft analyst, COO at the Draft Network. John, I checked out your website over the weekend when we got you lined up for the show. I got to tell you, it is the best draft website I've ever come across. And I love the interactivity of it. Fans can log on and create their own mock draft, their own big board. It's pretty amazing how interactive it is and how much fun it can be to look at your website right now.
Oh, thank you. We appreciate it. Our thought process when we launched back in the beginning of August was basically like, how do we make the draft even more fun and interactive for fans than it already is? Because everybody loves it. I mean, it's a growing phenomenon every year. And so we put kind of have the plans into place to build mock draft machine and build your own big board, and they've really come to fruition just this past week. I think those have been live for a week now, and people have just, I mean, the response has blown our minds. Now, we knew it would be big, but the fact that people have this thirst for the NFL draft, you know, is so cool this time of year and so much fun. So we've been really excited by it, and really appreciate you saying that you've enjoyed it as
yeah,
well.
It is yeah. great, thedraftnetwork.com. Hey, John, thanks. Good to talk to you. Maybe we'll talk again before over the next 7 weeks here, huh?
Absolutely. Sounds great, guys. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, John.
John Ledyard is a COO and draft analyst, senior draft analyst at the Draft Network website, thedraftnetwork.com. One word, the Draft Network. It is spectacular, Steve, that you can – I did it yesterday. You have your own mock draft. Pick a team and have a draft for them. It's amazing. It's really fun. It's and it changes. You know, as the interest in the draft increases every year, the resources available to fans gets better every year too.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I mean, I'm logging on to NFL.com when we were there last week, and their combine page is great, and they have instant reporting of all the results for the tests that come through. The Draft Network is even better now. You can have even more fun with it. It's really good.
This internet thing's pretty cool.
Yeah,
isn't it, right?
I think this internet thing might stick around for
work.
A while.
Yeah.
John Ledyard joined us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, presented by Subway Restaurants, proud to be locally owned and operated. All right, we're heavy on the combine today as it continues in Indy. Want to know from you which weekend combine performance should intrigue the Bills the most? Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550, or weigh in on Twitter. We'll check the Twitter poll results and maybe read a couple of tweets when we come back. One Bills Live, presented by Kalina Health from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Talking Bills, NFL, we do it every day here, noon to 3, One Bills Live. From One Bills Drive, John Murphy, Steve Tasker, snowy day in Orchard Park, March 4th. Okay, we can handle it another week or so. Hey, a little bit of NFL news today. The franchise tag goes on Jadeveon Clowney. The Houston Texans put the franchise tag on Clowney, according to NFL Network. Well, I mean, that was expected.
Yeah.
You can't let that guy get away, right? We talked to him last week.
He's done.
2 weeks ago, I said, that guy's a foundational player, isn't he?
Yeah.
You don't let that guy get loose.
Plus, his running mate, J.J. Watt, can't stay on the field all the time.
Yeah.
You know, you need a guy. And he's unbelievable. I mean, you watch the Houston Texans play in person. I have him on the sidelines and stuff. He is set aside athletically.
Yeah.
He's unbelievable.
You don't let that guy get loose.
You can't let that guy out the door.
Our Twitter poll today, which weekend combine performance should intrigue the Buffalo Bills the most? Which one intrigued you? We've got phone lines open to discuss, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. On Twitter, in our poll, two-thirds of you, 67%, say DK Metcalf, the wide receiver from Ole Miss. I get it. Big day, big test. I liked what I heard our last guest, John Ledyard, say about what's to come from Metcalf, although he loved him too. 13% say Quinnen Williams, the defensive tackle from Alabama. 11% say Montez Sweat, edge rush guy from Mississippi State. 8% have something else in mind. Give us a call and we'll discuss, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Call on the line from West Seneca, Tom in West Seneca. Go ahead, Tom. Hello.
John, Steve, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Sure.
John, I saw your interview last week with this Mr. Daniel Jeremiah.
Yes.
And I disagreed with him totally. He had picked last year the first three top quarterbacks to go would be Donald, Rosen, and Mayfield. And I think that, of course, Rosen's being traded already. And in my opinion, the two best quarterbacks were clearly Mayfield and Josh Allen. And it was a stroke of genius by Brandon Bean to land Josh Allen. I think he's going to have a fantastic year next year. I love the way Josh Allen plays the game. He plays with a lot of confidence. And back to Daniel Jeremiah again, I think that, in my opinion, and I'm not an expert, but with those picks he picked last year, picking Baker Mayfield third, I thought he rendered himself totally insignificant, with all due respect, of course. And
what do you mean? Because Baker was such an obvious number one?
Yes, I thought so. Baker and Josh Allen were the top two.
Tom, and I appreciate your fandom there. I'm telling you what, Sam Darnold is going to be a good NFL quarterback. He belongs in that group. He really does. Sam Darnold does. Yeah.
Don't burn the guy alive because he picked because he had the quarterbacks out of
out of order. You know, so, I mean, I get it. I mean, but that doesn't totally, you know, that doesn't totally lose his credibility because he missed on, because he had Josh Allen behind whoever, Josh Rosen. There were a lot of people that thought Josh Rosen was polished coming out and he was going to be very good. And he, listen, he still
may be. And we heard from those people last April, right after the draft, for weeks, right? The Josh Rosen, the Bills blew it. They could have had Josh Rosen and said they took Josh Allen. We heard from those
people.
Were they wrong? Maybe not. The story is yet to be told. Allen had a much better year than Josh Rosen on the team that had a lot more to offer than Josh Rosen. But we heard from those people. And Jeremiah was not the only one who put Rosen ahead of Josh Allen. Yeah, you call it a stroke of genius? Maybe it will be. But a year later, that's a snap judgment. I don't like to make those snap judgments.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to go back, you know, a short time, and let's let it get some more history between us and the picks, and we'll find out who was really right and who was really wrong, and for the reasons you say, because the reasons they say they might have been right and might not be as wrong as we in the future as they seem to be now. A lot has to happen before we know exactly who these four quarterbacks or five quarterbacks were taken in the first round. Lamar Jackson had as good a year as any of them. So, you know, you got to wait and see. And the guy, on this Twitter poll that we're on, Murph, and you keep going back to it. You know who keeps coming back to me as being the guy that I want the Bills to get?
Who?
Debo Samuel. The wide receiver that
not
you like.
Not at nine, not first round.
Not first round.
Maybe somehow, not even second round.
Somehow, some way, they got to get him.
Why?
Because of his frame and what they need him to do. They need him inside. They've got Robert Foster on the outside. You can plug another speed burner on the outside, either Isaiah McKenzie or some other person who is not on the team, or maybe. But they need a guy in the slot in a three wide receiver set. And Debo Samuel's 5'11", 215. He's built perfectly for it. He's going to be strong on the inside. If they put a slight corner on him, he's going to muscle him up. They're going to have struggle to cover him one-on-one. And that's the kind of frame and the kind of player you need down inside, a guy who's very agile. You loved him at the Senior Bowl. I was watching him as much as I could on the coverage that we had. That's the guy.
I like Debo Samuel a lot, and I loved him at the Senior Bowl, and I was talking about him a lot. But again, they need receivers, plural. They need, even maybe more importantly, a number one receiver, a number one target. I don't know if Debo Samuel fits that mold. I really don't. He's good, but I don't know that he's a dominant potential number one guy. I mean, you could easily project that Metcalf could be a number one, a couple of these others. I don't know if you could say that about Debo Samuel.
No,
he's a slot guy, I think.
But I played on a team where a slot guy was number one, and he's in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. You know, of course, he had a Hall of Famer on the other side, on the outside too, in James Lofton. But
different game.
It was a different game, but it is. Yeah, but that you can do that. You can have a team that is centered around that guy. The Patriots do it. They've done it for a long time. Wes Welker, Danny Woodhead, Julian Edelman. Go down the list. Those guys in the slot are they're kind of like a tight end, but they're not. And they're better in a lot of respects. And you can use them like that. The quarterback can see them really well. They've got inside and outside breaking routes. They're not on the boundary doesn't hem them in. You can motion them to and from the formation. You can line them up in the backfield and shift them out. You can put the defense under a lot of pressure by alignment, motion, and shifts that give the defense problems, particularly inside, where you might have linebackers and safeties having to communicate as to who's got them and how the adjustments go. I love that spot. I think it's always been effective. Maybe it's colored by my career as an NFL player and the success my team had with a guy like that. But I want a guy who is built like a running back that plays wide receiver, like an Anquan Boldin, like a Hines Ward, or like the guy that is out there right now Golden Tate. Although I think Golden Tate's past his prime. That's who I'm looking for. My number one doesn't have to be a guy that lines up on the boundary. You know, I just want a guy who you can go to when the chips are down. That's the guy, and I don't care if they know he's getting it.
Yeah.
You know, you can still get it to him. That's the guy I want as number one. And I think this kid Debo Samuel has got a chance to be that.
Which weekend combine performance should intrigue the Bills the most? A tweet on this on the tweet sheet from Sippin' the Kool-Aid. These guys perform well, but Miles Boykin, Notre Dame wide receiver, had better overall numbers than DK Metcalf. He goes on to say, I also think that guys like Garrett Bradbury, the center, Chris Lindstrom, another offensive lineman, had amazing numbers as offensive linemen. Looks like a very deep draft this year. Glad we have the 10 picks. Miles Boykin had, I think, some good numbers
Notre
at the combine
Dame.
Today, Notre Dame wide receiver.
6'3", 225 pounds.
4.42 in the 40-yard dash. That's pretty
4-4-2?
Good.
4.42?
Yep. That's pretty good.
Bro, that's really fast.
Yeah.
That is really fast. Yeah, I'm that intrigues me too, because I didn't know I don't know who that
is. The size intrigues me. 6'4", 220, Miles Boykin. Yeah. NFL.com has him, his grade, whatever that means, is 5.54, a chance to be an NFL starter. Okay. See the ninth overall pick? I don't know about that. I don't know about that.
I don't know. Why? Did you see him at the Senior Bowl? He wasn't there.
No, I don't remember him at the Senior Bowl if he was there.
See, that's
because I want a guy who's a – if you're going to pick a receiver at number nine, he's got to be your number one guy. He's got to be the number one, I think.
Well,
Collier from –
that's why you're not going to pick a guy at number nine at wide receiver.
You might.
No, you won't.
You guarantee that?
You're picking
DK Metcalf,
you're
if he's there at nine, you're not picking
You're picking an offensive tackle, an offensive lineman.
You might.
That's what I'm telling you.
You're guaranteeing me that if Metcalf is there at number nine, Bills don't pick him. He might not. He probably won't last till number nine.
Guarantee it.
You're not ready to guarantee that.
I can't guarantee that. We got a long way to go.
Dominic in Buffalo.
But today, that's what I would do.
Dominic in Buffalo. Go ahead, Dominic. Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to hit on Murray and Brown in the Bills draft, but first, give you guys some props. Murph, the energy and enthusiasm you bring to the booth, to the game, is amazing, especially after following a legend in Van Miller.
Oh, that's nice. Thank you very much, Dominic.
Steve, man, you are definitely a Hall of Famer, without a doubt. Correct me if I'm wrong, but cause some of the criteria is pioneers and game changers and people who would change their position. The other team had to game plan against number 89. That never happened before. They put a position in the Pro Bowl for special teams because of number 89. Two, three guys didn't even stop you. You changed the way the game was played, Steve. You were awesome. I love you, man. You don't sprinkle sprinkles on cupcakes, man. You tell it the way it is, just like when you played, man, and you're awesome, man. You're definitely a Hall of Famer in my eyes. And
well, Dominic, I appreciate it, but you need to pump the brakes a little bit. They were sending guys to the Pro Bowl before I was in the league, and it was more guys like Bill Bates and Mossy Tatupu that really pioneered them putting that position on the Pro Bowl roster. Plus, the roster's getting bigger that allowed guys to do that. To be in the Hall of Fame, you've got to be an elite player for a long time. I was good. I don't know if I was elite, but thank you. I appreciate the conversation.
League, my man. But anyways, Steve, I do agree with you with Kyler Murray. At this point, you're a 20-year-old kid who played college ball. You haven't proved anything. So, I mean, if you don't want to throw, okay, fine, you don't want to throw. But if it's because you're 20 pounds overweight, what are you going to do once you got a couple million bucks in your pocket? How are you going to show up after, you know, in the off season when you're actually in the league? So you can't start doing that now when you have to go all out or nothing. I just don't get it. And the thing with Antonio Brown is, I agree with you guys on, you know, it's probably a little stupid to come out and say something like that when you're looking for a job. But again, he's not Kyler Murray. He is Antonio Brown, like you said. I mean, he's been a Pro Bowler. He's won Super Bowls. You know, he's been the best wide receiver in the NFL. And there is a big difference between need and want. I mean, he doesn't need to play in the NFL anymore, but he wants to. You know, he has proven everything. I mean, yeah, he should be pumping the brakes a little bit also, but, I mean, he has kind of earned that right. I mean, he is the best wide receiver in the league, so if people want to pay him, you know, he's going to come to practice, he's going to play, he's going to be formed. He's never showed anything less.
Thanks, Dominic. Good points. On Kyler Murray, Steve, and John Ledyard made a good point about this, I think, and we mildly debated earlier on about whether it's a big mistake that he didn't throw, didn't run at the combine this weekend. Okay, and you said it is. All right. I don't think it is. But I thought Ledger made a really good point. Look, none of the other quarterbacks in this year's class have done anything to put themselves ahead of Kyler Murray, right? He was probably number one before they stepped on the field Saturday. He remains the number one quarterback. The Ohio State Haskins maybe challenges him, but it hasn't been really impressive, you know, what you've seen from Drew Locke from Missouri or Daniel Jones from Duke. None of those other quarterbacks have shown anything that would bump Kyler Murray off the top of the heap, I think, at the quarterback spot. So what did he lose by not throwing? What did he lose?
That's
You're going to draft a quarterback in 2019 and you want the best one, you're probably going to take Kyler Murray. That was the case last Friday before he chose not to throw, and that's the case today, Monday.
It's interesting. Where's his competition? Is he competing with the rest of the draft to try to get to the number one spot? You know, is that what he's thinking? Is he want to get it drafted as – I think that's the idea, right? You want to get it drafted as high as you can. You want to put yourself as high as you possibly can. Now, he's done one thing in that he's played cornerback. He's the guy that at the position that every team has got to have, and a lot of teams always, every year in the draft, have to fix and to draft a guy. Now, you're right. His competition is the rest of the quarterbacks. It's not – him against Josh Allen or Sam Darnold or Josh Rosen or Lamar Jackson or Baker Mayfield. It's him against Drew Lock. It's him against the other guys who did throw. And if those guys are going out there and not throwing very well, you know, that does help him.
He hasn't lost anything.
He hasn't lost anything.
Yeah,
but for me, I don't think there's any question, you know, what's he hiding?
Nothing.
But here's the thing.
It's widely speculated.
Somebody's got to take him. Somebody has to have a quarterback.
The Arizona Cardinals, widely speculated, are going to take him with the number one pick overall. Maybe he's so convinced of that, he's thinking, why do I put on this weight and I don't feel 100%? I will throw on March 13th. Why do I want to go out there in this stupid combine atmosphere and jeopardize me being the top-rated quarterback here? Look, maybe he's already got a handshake and a wink from the Arizona Cardinals, right?
From Kingsbury.
Yeah, from Cliff Kingsbury, right?
Maybe. Yeah.
And so it wouldn't benefit him to throw.
And I don't know how the back channels of things work. I really don't know whether he's had off-the-record conversations with Cliff Kingsbury or from his agents or from them, these guys or that guy. And I don't know whether Josh Rosen really is on the trading block. I don't know what the Arizona Cardinals are thinking. They're keeping it speculative. It's interesting. But it is true. It's not Kyler Murray against the NFL draft. It's Kyler Murray against the rest of the quarterbacks in his class. If you're going to be the top quarterback, play your cards the right way. And he's certainly playing poker right now.
We've got a break. We'll take more of your calls. We'll talk more about what you thought of the combine, which combine performance should intrigue the Bills. We got Michael Lombardi coming up at 2 o'clock today. He has written the book Gridiron Genius. It's a really good book. I finished it last week. We'll talk more about that when we come back. One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. It's been good to be back here. We got another hour to go, obviously, but it's been good to be back. I do feel we have firmly reestablished control of the One Buffalo studio.
Considering nobody else is in the building.
With a great show here today. There's nobody else here.
We're running unopposed today.
Good. Yeah, but it's good. We've reestablished ourselves as the focal point of the One Buffalo studio, and I feel good about that. Our Twitter question today, our topic of the day, which weekend combine performance should intrigue the Buffalo Bills the most? Steve has some responses from Twitter.
Brian Faulkner says, sign me up for Montez Sweat or DK Metcalf from this group. No way Quinnen Williams lasts until number 9. The Bills would have to trade up to get him.
Probably
and I get
right.
that. He's probably right. But you know what? It's fun. This is it's the time of year when there are certain guys out there, like this Quinnen Williams. This guy is going to play. I mean, he is going to play, and he's going to be a really good player. All signs point to that. He was productive in college. He's big. He's athletic. He's, you know, he's going to be a handful down inside for teams. He can pursue from the backside. I mean, he's just got all these gifts, physical gifts. Plus, he came from a college that he gets coached hard. So he's going to understand what it is to be in a pro atmosphere, even though he didn't play. He hasn't played professionally yet. So this is the guy that, to me, is a can't miss. And you're right. At number 9, no way. He's not going to be there. But it's fun to think about, you know, what could happen if he does drop to you.
One more from the tweet sheet from Wandering Jack. He says, Murph, me, has been on Montez Sweat since the Senior Bowl, and his combine performance should remove any doubt. I'm a little worried about DK Metcalf's hands and range of movement, but Sweat has done it over time and put it on tape. The Bills need pass rush help. All of that true.
Yeah. Montez Sweat's true. Just – and I mentioned this to our guest about, you know, these guys, where do they come from? He goes, listen, Montez did it. He's putting up double-digit sacks every year at Mississippi State. And he showed that he put on some weight and still kept his athleticism. This is a guy that seems to be committed to doing what it takes physically to be a good player. He's got some technique. He's got some pass rush. He's got some production at the next level. He seems to me like a guy who's, I think, maybe shows a chance of being a better pro than he was a college player. And he was a really good college player.
Boy, it was seven plus weeks from the draft, first round of the draft, right? It's going to be fun the next 7 weeks, Steve, because they could go that way, right? Pass rusher, edge rush guy. They could logically and easily take an offensive lineman. There's some really good ones who belong towards the bottom of the top 10. They could get a wide receiver, and they could get DK Metcalf, who electrified so many people this weekend. He's got a lot of doors open to him. I feel like more than ever right now, after that combine, a lot of doors are open for the Buffalo Bills right now, and they're going to have to drill down and find exactly what they want. And they've got 7 weeks to do it.
Yeah, I agree. Free agency opens up a week from tomorrow.
Yeah,
that's an enormous event. So that will tell us more of what they're going to do in the draft when we find out what veterans they've actually had landed. So that'll be the next step in this. In this process towards getting to the 2019 regular season. It's going to be fun. These next couple of months are – and I always say this, and it's true, there are going to be some new members of the family, and we're expecting them anytime. We don't know who it's going to be yet. So it's pretty fun to think about.
We got a good guest coming up. He is a three-time Super Bowl winner, former NFL general manager, longtime personnel executive, and the author of the book Gridiron Genius. Michael Lombardi is going to join us live when we come back here on the show. We're looking forward to talking to him about his book. He's coming up next. One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.